A mother sits at the dinner table, tears streaming down her face as her five-year-old daughter screams at the sight of a chicken nugget. Not just any chicken nugget, the wrong brand. The father checks his watch. They've been at this for 40 minutes. The toddler in the high chair has thrown his plate on the floor for the third time. This isn't a scene from a parenting horror story. It's Tuesday night for millions of families. Here's what most people don't understand. When a child gags at the sight of broccoli or has a meltdown over the texture of mashed potatoes, they're not being dramatic. Their nervous system is sending genuine distress signals, as real as the pain you'd feel touching a hot stove. Food chaining, developed by speech pathologist Sherry Fracker, has transformed how we understand and address these feeding struggles. Endorsed by pediatric specialists nationwide and adopted by feeding clinics with success rates exceeding 80%, this approach recognizes a fundamental truth. Food refusal isn't about stubbornness. It's about how children experience food through every sense in their body. Every parent knows the drill. Chicken fingers are beloved one week, rejected the next. But when does normal selectivity become genuinely problematic? Consider Emma, a typical picky eater. At three, she rotates through about 30 foods, fixating on fish sticks for weeks before suddenly refusing them, only to accept them again months later. She's brand specific, only Goldfish crackers, never store brand, and cycles through favorites constantly. Frustrating? Absolutely. But this represents normal developmental pickiness most children outgrow. Now meet Jack, a problem eater. At two, his entire diet consists of five foods. He doesn't just refuse new foods, he reacts with genuine fear. When his mother places an apple slice on his plate, he pushes away, eyes wide, sometimes gagging before the food reaches his mouth. Problem eaters typically accept fewer than 20 foods and often refuse entire food groups. Their reactions aren't manipulation, they're genuine distress responses to underlying conditions like reflux, oral motor difficulties, or sensory processing disorders. Recognizing that food refusal stems from physical discomfort rather than defiance shifts the dynamic from frustration to compassion, opening the door to effective help. 7-year-old Sally's chest felt on fire every time she ate. She developed a persistent cough and vomited frequently, naturally refusing meals. Her mother exhausted every parenting strategy before discovering Sally had severe gastroesophageal reflux disease. Eating genuinely hurt. Medical conditions frequently masquerade as simple pickiness. GERD affects countless children with feeding disorders, causing actual esophageal or lung damage. Children learn quickly. Eating leads to pain. This association persists even after treatment. Eosinophilic esophagitis, an allergic esophageal inflammation, mimics GERD but resists standard reflux medications. Food gets stuck in children's throats. Imagine swallowing while choking. They develop feeding aversion because their body stages a genuine allergic revolt. Cherry Fraker's son Luke battled cyclic vomiting syndrome, sudden, intense episodes lasting hours or days, followed by weeks of normalcy. At two, Luke warned his mother by saying, "Mommy, the monster is coming." For 6 years, every 6-12 weeks brought life-threatening dehydration episodes. These conditions create learned associations outlasting the medical problem. Even after physical resolution, children remember eating led to pain. Breaking this psychological connection requires systematic intervention. You can't simply tell a child food won't hurt anymore and expect belief. 4-month-old Isaac was hospitalized twice for pneumonia before anyone discovered why. During feedings, he choked and turned colors, aspirating formula into his lungs. The culprit? A fast flow nipple combined with weak oral motor skills. His lips couldn't seal properly, and his sucking couldn't control the flow. He was drowning during meals. The solution was straightforward. Switch to a medium flow nipple, thicken the formula slightly, keep him upright during feedings, and strengthen his lip seal through therapy. Without intervention, Isaac would have developed a severe feeding aversion. Why would any baby want to eat when eating feels like drowning? Swallowing requires 3 coordinated stages. First, you chew and push food back with your tongue. Second, food enters your throat while your epiglottis protects your airways, both involuntary. Third, food moves through your esophagus to your stomach. When any stage fails, you have dysphagia, difficulty swallowing. The physical tools for eating matter profoundly. A spoon too large prevents proper tongue positioning. A nipple flowing too fast creates terror. A cup mismatched to a child's lip seal causes constant spilling. When eating becomes a physical struggle, children can't explore new tastes and textures. They're too busy managing the basic mechanics of not choking. For children with sensory processing disorders, mealtime sensations are amplified tenfold. Fork scraping sounds like nails on a chalkboard. Cooking meat triggers gagging from across the room. Mashed potatoes feel like slime. Their nervous systems don't filter sensory information appropriately, leaving them overwhelmed by input others barely notice. These children fall into distinct patterns. Under-responsive children can't distinguish flavors. Chocolate cake and plain bread taste identical, so they drown food in hot sauce seeking enough input to register taste. Over-responsive children experience sensations too intensely, with cooking smells triggering nausea from another room. Sensory seekers crave intense stimulation, squishing and smearing food but rarely eating it. Sensory fluctuators alternate unpredictably, eating spicy curry one day, then melting down over plain pasta the next. Family meals have become rare, yet sitting together experiencing varied foods is precisely how children learn to manage complex sensory information. Without exposure to different textures, temperatures, and flavors in a supportive environment, children never develop the sensory tolerance needed to expand their diets. Only 12% of feeding disorders are purely behavioral. When a child refuses food, assume communication before manipulation. The child spitting out chicken might lack oral motor skills, experience sensory aversion, or associate meat with choking. Positive reinforcement requires strategic implementation. Telling a child to stop throwing food rewards the behavior with attention. Instead, ignore negative actions while praising any positive eating behavior, however small. 2-year-old Brayden's program built on existing preferences: crunchy foods, smooth peanut butter, salty tastes, warm temperatures. He liked Ritz crackers. They introduced Ritz bits with fillings, then Goldfish, then thin crust pizza. Each step maintained safe characteristics while gradually introducing variation. Food chaining uses a sensory hierarchy. Children must tolerate being near new food before progressing to sight, smell, touch, and finally taste. Alicia Hart's autistic son, Ewan, couldn't sit near shrimp creole without hyperventilating. Through therapy, she discovered Ewan didn't instinctively understand food's purpose. Progress came from shows about how foods are made. His brain needed logical framework before engaging sensory experience. Children with autism struggle to interpret competing sensory inputs: lights, noise, textures, aromas. Many prefer uniform textures because they're predictable. Children with Down syndrome face weak muscle tone affecting feeding from birth. Children with visual impairments need color contrast settings and sensory trays to explore food using other senses. Food refusal stems from genuine sensory overwhelm, medical discomfort, or oral motor challenges, not defiance. Understanding this transforms the family's relationship with mealtimes. Food chaining respects where children are while creating gentle bridges forward. It builds on existing preferences, using flavor mapping to identify patterns and create logical progressions. A child who loves McDonald's chicken nuggets can eventually eat grilled chicken through a path of trying different nugget brands, then differently textured nuggets, then other breaded items, then finally grilled meat with accepted sauces. The success stories are remarkable. Children expanding from 5 foods to over 30, reducing tube feeding dependence, families reclaiming mealtime joy. These transformations require patience, consistency, and a multidisciplinary team addressing all aspects of the feeding challenge. What makes this approach revolutionary is that it empowers parents with understanding. You're not fighting your child, you're partnering to overcome genuine obstacles. That meltdown over the wrong cracker brand isn't manipulation, it's a sensory processing disorder seeking predictability. Food chaining offers a compassionate path, honoring both the child's struggles and the family's need for peace. When mealtimes transform from battlefields to gathering places, families don't just eat better, they live better.